Welcome to Rhode Island's Amazing Women. I'm Deborah Giro, host and creator of the radio show and the podcast, which you can stream now on all your favorite devices. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe, leave a positive review on Apple Podcast. Help us spread the word for Rhode Island's Amazing Women so we can feature more amazing women like my guest today. Kelly Nevins is the Chief Executive Officer of the Women's Fund of Rhode Island. It's a social justice organization with the goal of improving the lives of women and girls by changing the face of philanthropy. Kelly has been the Women's Fund of Rhode Island CEO since 2016. Her expertise lies in strategic development, motivating teams and individuals, and workplace equity, which is really important. So she has a BA in English, a master's in education from URI, and an MS in leadership from Roger Williams University. So she certainly knows the state. She lives in Providence with her husband, and we've known each other, full disclosure, for many, many years. And I'm delighted to have you here today. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah. So let's start with the basic question. You know, what does the Women's Fund do in Rhode Island?
Yeah, sure. So our mission is to invest in women and girls, and we do that through research on the status of women and girls, using that as a fact-based platform to advocate primarily for state-level change. We teach leadership and advocacy, and we're also a grant maker. So we invest in other organizations that are working on issues of equity. Ultimately, we just have this little goal of achieving gender equity through systemic change. And when we do that, we also will be working to help address other issues of inequity, such as race, sexual preference, abilities, things like that, that stop people from being their full selves when they lack access and opportunity in the broader community. A quicker way to say it is we're working to close the gender, wage, wealth, health, and power gaps here in Rhode Island and beyond.
And gender equity is not a small goal by any means. And we know the Women's Fund of Rhode Island was started in 2001 by the late Simone Joyeau. I had the honor of being one of the founding board members of the Women's Fund of Rhode Island. I served 10 years on the board with members like Lila Sappinsley, Mirth York, Rogerie Thompson. And at that time, the Women's Fund began at looking at the status of women and girls in Rhode Island because nothing like this had ever been done. You know, the economics, education, technology, healthcare, and of course, political participation. And that evolved into the grant making through a gender lens. And as you said, promoting equality for women. So you've been the chief executive since 2006. How has the work of the Women's Fund of Rhode Island evolved over the past, say, 8 to 10 years?
I've been the executive director and then renamed CEO since 2016. The reason that we went to the CEO model is because often women work in nonprofits leading organizations and aren't recognized as being CEOs. Typically, it's men who are CEOs. And so we are working to flip that script. So just a quick aside.
You know, and I love that the board recognize you as a CEO because you're right. Most nonprofits do not do that. Yeah. So that's right. A great point. What year was that?
That was so then the name change or the title change came in 2020. So as we were addressing issues of COVID.
So back to the question, you know, Winston Churchill says the farther backward you can look, the farther further you can go see, right? So what has changed or what has evolved in the last 8 years during your tenure?
Yeah, sure. So certainly we continue to do research, again, on the status of women and girls, but it looks a little different than how it used to be. So for example, we host on our website now at WFRI.org, something called the Women's Wellbeing Index. And this index looks at every city and town throughout Rhode Island and compares how well women do with men in those cities and towns, also rolling up to districts and to the state as a whole, again, to see how well women fare compared to their male counterparts. And where possible, we also disaggregate that information by race. One thing that we have now that's different than before is this data gets updated automatically every year as new census data rolls in. You can expect at the around January of each year that the latest data has been uploaded. We're a little bit slower in getting our policy briefs finished. Those we have to write manually. Ours are just about to go to print with the data that was uploaded this January. Also, what is different is that we now have a Women's Policy Institute that is operating every year as opposed to every other year. We truly believe in giving women the tools that they need to be the voice for change in the community, however they imagine that voice for change might be. Each year we recruit a cohort of about 20 women from across the state who learn about how to advocate for legislative change at the state level. And they learn about how do you write bills, how do you find sponsors for bills, how do you motivate folks outside of the dome, so to say, the people of Rhode Island to support a particular bill, and how do you work with legislators to get your bill passed? And the women who go through this program, many of them, after their experience, decide that they'd like to run for office. We are a nonpartisan organization, but we wholly support the idea of women serving at the tables where decisions are made and resources are allocated. We have more frequent programming again on teaching women to run for office. And this year, we actually are hosting a new program called Help Her Run, which will help people to become campaign managers for other women who run for office.
And I think seeing that the Women's Policy Institute is an every year program is great. When we first started with the Women's Fund, I remember as board members, it was an every other year program. And I know with the political participation, the numbers were just so poor back in 2000, 2001, 2004. It was just really, really lackluster. Matter of fact, it inspired me to run when I did back in, 2008. So let's talk about another thing that I think that is different and that has changed is, and we wrestled with this on the board at the very beginning, and that is you have, have men on the board.
We truly believe that to have a more equitable community, we need to have everybody's voices heard and reflected. We believe in we can grow the pie. We can have more slices to share with people, but also we don't want to take away. We want to build. And so certainly recognizing that men make up half the population, we need to hear their voices, but also to engage them as allies in the work. And so if we're not inviting them to the table, we're losing out on an opportunity to hear about their lived experiences and how we can work together towards shared goals.
And you don't want to contradict your own values. If you're asking for gender equity, you can't exclude other people. It almost it doesn't it's a rub, right? Let's talk about because you are very involved in policy work. What are some of the legislative initiatives?
The three buckets that we focus on, which are really big buckets, to be perfectly honest, are reproductive rights and freedom. Making sure that women and people in general have autonomy over their body and their decisions, and have access to quality healthcare that's going to keep them healthy. Reproductive rights and freedom. The second bucket is women's economic security. And so in this bucket, we focus on paid family leave, fair pay, earned sick and safe time, a variety of things that help women to stay in the workplace, but also to care for their families and to earn living wages. And then the third bucket is around civic engagement and participation. And so here we focus on things like voter access. But also, even if we're not working on specific pieces of legislation, overall, we're working on ways to improve each of these different areas. So, for example, in the civic engagement piece, aside from encouraging women to run for office and support others who are running, we're also working to make the appointments process to state boards and commissions more transparent. And as well as more accessible for the average everyday person to run for office. So, I'm not run for office, be appointed to boards and commissions. We're actually finishing up a research report right now that's looking at the diversity of state boards and commissions. Again, we're going to use that as our fact-based platform to say, here's one of the reasons why we need to make this process more transparent. We believe that the final data will show that either we don't have enough evidence at all, like we haven't been tracking what the gender and the race of folks are who serve on state boards and commissions, but also, how are we recruiting people? Like, what can we do to improve that process?
Three important buckets: reproductive freedom and rights, economic security, like the paid family leave, and you talked about civic engagement, voting and just having access to boards and whatnot. I'm Deb Ruggiero. Karen Kay is our producer. And if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe, leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts because you can stream now on all your favorite devices. My guest is Kelly Nevins, the Chief Executive Officer of the Women's Fund of Rhode Island. It's a social justice organization with the goal of improving the lives of women and girls by changing the face of philanthropy and doing a lot of the grant making through a gender lens. I also want to give our listeners the website, Kelly, WFRI.org, and you can check in with the Women's Wellness Index, the Policy Institute. There's so much going on at the Women's Fund of Rhode Island. Again, WFRI.org. Let's talk about the research the Women's Fund of Rhode Island has done and a lot of work around paid family leave. What have you found and why is this important to families?
Rhode Island's paid family leave passed in 2013, and I'm proud to say that the Women's Fund was part of that passage and our Women's Policy
Absolutely.
Institute at that time. And at that time, Rhode Island was one of the forerunners in the country for paid family leave. We were the best of the best because, frankly, there weren't a whole lot of states that were doing it. Now that paid family leave has expanded to many states, we actually have fallen towards the bottom in terms of the types of benefits that we offer for paid family leave. Another report that we're just about to release is going to show who's been using paid family leave and who hasn't. And no surprise here, typically it's more well-off people who are using Rhode Island's paid family leave, which currently is 6 weeks of 60% of your salary for you to take time off to care for a very seriously ill family member or to welcome a new child into the family. If you are a low-income person, 60% of your low income is not enough to get by. And so, unfortunately, there are a lot of people of color and women who are represented at that lower economic level who just are not able to access paid family leave at this point.
So what are you advocating for? A higher percentage?
So, yes, a couple of different things. In 2024, specifically, we are working to expand paid family leave from 6 to 12 weeks and also to expand the definition of family. Currently, you have to be an immediate family member. You're welcoming a child, you're caring for a parent. But we recognize that today's families are not the traditional nuclear families of the days of yore. And so we're working to expand the definition of family to include grandparents who may be caring for their grandchildren, brothers and sisters who may be caring for their nieces and nephews or for each other. I know for me personally, I have two sisters who have serious health issues. I could see a day where, I might need paid family leave to care for them, but I wouldn't be able to do it under the current law.
So the current law simply states you have to be a direct, immediate family member, like it has to be a mother, a father,
Yes.
husband, a wife. Okay, as opposed to a family member.
Yes,
That's
right.
not, that's very, restrictive.
Exactly.
Interesting.
We will continue to advocate also for increasing the salary cap so that more low-income people can access paid family leave. We would love to see 90% replacement of salary for folks who are at the lowest economic rungs so that they truly do have the time to step back and care for them, their family members and themselves if they're new parents, for example. There's
How would
a
this
lot
be
that
paid for?
happens.
How would this be paid for? Does it come
Yeah,
from?
well, in Rhode Island, paid family leave is paid for purely by employees. So there are
Right.
no, this is not something that employers invest in. We could see a day where, we could get employers to invest in this program. But basically in Rhode Island, payroll taxes for folks who make up to $86,000, I think it's $86,000, a small sliver of that through payroll taxes is put into the Temporary Care Insurance TCI program to pay for paid family leave. One way to pay for the expansion going forward is to increase the cap. So, in other words, people taking that little portion of payroll tax for folks who make up to $150,000, for example. So, currently, if you make more than $86,000, you only get that little slice of payroll tax on the first $86,000 of your
So you're
salary.
saying add another tax essentially or increase going
Increase.
86 to 150,000. It would be an increase.
And so ironically, it's the people who make more money, who are paying less to the system
It's usually the
and
way it
taking
works.
more of the family leave. And so we want to balance that out.
And how many other states have this kind of family plan with 12 weeks versus six and 90% versus 60%.
Yeah, that's a great question, Deb, that I don't have the answer to.
Okay, that's
I
all
do
right.
know it's over a dozen states.
Cool.
And I do know that, for example, Massachusetts and Connecticut, both neighbors, have better paid family leave benefits than Rhode Island does. But I'm sorry, I don't have the exact answer for
That's okay. That's the state rep in me just wanting to know. Okay. What are the similarities and differences? So let's also pivot now because you're doing an awful lot of work, as you said, with civic engagement. You know, what are some of the courses and workshops that the Women's Fund of Rhode Island is offering to women and girls? I mean, I think you talked about running for office, you know, helping a woman run, you know, feather that out a little bit more for us.
Frankly, those are the two programs that we're doing right now on civic engagement, a Help Her Run and Ready to Run. We are in the process of dreaming a civic engagement program of the future that would support young girls. So, we're talking about how can we reach high school students and college students who may not be required to take any kind of civic engagement course throughout the program. And so we're that's a work in progress that we're very excited to be thinking about and hopefully we'll be rolling out sometime late this year or perhaps next year.
And again, the website wfri.org has all of these programs, and it's so important to make sure that women do run for office, because as we've said, it's important to have a voice at the table. You know, the line we
Right.
would always use at the beginning was, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu.
That's right. That's right. I will
So.
say that we do run a regular discussions, panel discussions called Real Talk with Rhode Island that basically address different common issues in Rhode Island. For example, we'll be doing one on called Getting on Board that is going to be addressing the research that I mentioned earlier about the diversity of who serves on boards and commissions, as well as who serves on Rhode Island's largest nonprofit boards. And using that as an opportunity then to not only talk about the research findings, but to tell people about how they might go about serving on boards and also to talk about different policy solutions. So whether it's Real Talk with Women's Fund of Rhode Island getting on board or expanding paid family leave or any number of current issues, we do those programs at least quarterly, if not more often, depending on the urgency of the particular topic and what it is that we're trying to achieve. And so while it's not direct civic engagement in terms of having women run for office or teaching them specifically how to engage, we always work that into the different programs that we do. Here's what you can do as the average person.
And Kelly, I know you've been a leader in the nonprofit sector in Rhode Island since 1990. Do the nonprofits in Rhode Island, and I believe they're like over 6,500 in our states,
Something like that, yeah.
501c3 tax exempt. I think they're paying about $4 billion in wages to almost 70,000 workers. So they really have an economic input, right? And let's face it,
Absolutely.
you have to make money in order to champion the causes that you're
That's right.
talking about, right? So how does that work?
Yeah, well, so interestingly enough, the nonprofit sector, if I recall the stat, recent stat correctly, is it makes up about 18% of Rhode Island's workforce. So these are people who work in daycare centers, who work in community centers, who are connecting people to, benefits, your United Ways, your Da Vinci Community Center, variety of different nonprofit organizations of which we are one. So 18% of the workforce is direct, it works in nonprofits. I would say roughly 70% of those employed in the nonprofit sector are women. Also a very high amount of folks who are people of color, who often are being paid minimum wage or not much more for the work that they do. So these are people who are doing the work that perhaps some would argue the government should be doing, or that are just working to make our communities better. And yet we're often not paying living wages to these individuals. And so, yeah, it's an area that I think about a lot. There is a new group called the Alliance for Nonprofit Impact that is going to be working to advocate on behalf of the nonprofit sector in the states, and Women's Fund of Rhode Island will definitely support the work that they're advocating for. Again, precisely because women and people of color tend to be predominantly represented in that workforce.
Yeah, those are some pretty staggering statistics too, that 70% of people in the nonprofit workforce are women. And
Yeah.
that's why the Women's Fund of Rhode Island's work is so necessary, right?
Absolutely. And if I could share one more interesting statistic, the Census of Directors and Nonprofit Leaders that we're just about to release actually showed that women serving on boards of Rhode Island's largest nonprofits dropped significantly in the last couple of years due to COVID. And so we want to work to reverse that trend as well.
Absolutely. We need more women at the table in the boardroom and on the
Yes.
boards. Kelly
Right.
Nevins is the CEO of the Women's Fund of Rhode Island. Keep up the great work. Thank you for joining me today. I
Thank
end each
you.
show with a quote, and this one is from Jane Goodall. What you do makes a difference, and you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make. So true.
Thank
I'm
you.
Deborah Giro. Thank you so much for listening to Rhode Island's Amazing Women. Please be sure to subscribe, leave a positive review, an Apple podcast. It helps spread the word so we can feature more of Rhode Island's amazing women in the future. Thanks for joining us. Stay well.